Hare Krishna. In our little seminar, we are approaching slowly the end and the high point. We have now so far discussed that it's very important to receive blessings. I believe that this is a new concept for us Westerners, because we are used to do things due to our own effort. But with the power of blessings, we can do things which are, so to say, impossible to do for us. In other words, our own effort could not possibly do these things by our own efforts. Alright, we are there. A very nice little information from Srila Prabhupada's books on the power of blessings is when the mighty army of the demons gets challenged and defeated by a less mighty army of the apes. Yes, you know, when Lord Ramachandra made his siege on Lanka, his army was composed of monkeys. They confronted the very, very, very ferociously equipped army of Ravana, which was really working on atomic force, nuclear bombs, and all these things. They really had it together, these demons. Black magic, everything was there. But Prabhupada said the reason why the monkeys were still victorious was because they were blessed. They had Daivi Shakti, whereas the demons had Purusha Shakti. Daivi Shakti means a superior energy given by blessings, and Purusha Shakti is the human energy, human effort, which is composed out of physical and mental strengths. See, when you want divine blessings, you are actually approaching a totally different energy. It's an intelligent energy, it's a divine energy, it's the energy which works through you, but which is not of your own. It is has a total different quality to it than the energy which is made of mind and out of physical energy. I very much like this idea of it's an intelligent energy. You know, nowadays in modern warfare, there are so-called intelligent missiles. They find their goal, then they leave aside what is not their goal. So the Daivi Shakti, or the energy of blessing, will always find its goal. It will work through you, and how do you say, it will use you, and you don't have to really think much. It does everything. Hare Krishna. So that's where we are, and we wanted to discuss what is necessary to receive that divine energy. We have already said what is necessary to receive this energy is that you practice humility. So now I want to enter the practice of humility. I want to make a humility workshop. by giving you a few areas in your life. This humility will attract more or less this divine energy of blessing. It's almost like I remember in the old times I once read an example which I liked very much. It was given by a Prabhupada disciple who said, the cloud has electrical energy, but it does not come out. The flesh doesn't come out under ordinary circumstances. Only when the cloud becomes so condensed and the tension, electrical tension, so tense, then and only the floor or the ground of the earth is very negative, then from the positive charge, the flesh comes down to the negatively charged earth. Is it somewhat correct, Ruben? You have you are our scientist here, I believe. How exactly is it going? Could you help us? Are you familiar with this? Or
the cloud is positively charged.
Yeah.
And the earth is negatively charged. And then there is a flow of positively charged ions toward the earth.
Yeah. And how does the flesh itself come? I think the cloud has to become blacker and blacker, and then it collides with another cloud. Or please tell us, we are very ignorant.
That's an electrostatic discharge, like a spark.
Mm-hmm.
That is electric energy that comes from the discharge.
Mm-hmm. Somehow. You are not familiar with this in detail. You are more studying the
humanities.
What?
I'm in humanities.
Excuse me. So yes, you have to become negative to charge negative towards the material energy. And then you will get you will attract what Ruben said, that positively charged the energy of the Lord. Huh? Hare Krishna. Now, how to practice humility? I want to read to you a song by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he gives some guidelines, actually. Have to get the right pitch. If you desire, too high. If you desire to engage in chanting Krishna's names and glories, then do everything you can to gain the qualifications necessary to do so. Give up false ego and think of yourself as very lowly and wretched, more insignificant than grass. Practice the virtue of tolerance by emulating the trees. Emulate means to follow, isn't it? Emulating or absorbing the quality of the trees. Give up revenge and look after other creatures. Do not give distress to any other being in order to maintain your body. Forget your own selfish concerns by serving others. Even if you possess all good qualities, do not try to profit from it by looking for prestige. Keep your heart simple. Know that all living beings carry Krishna in their heart, and so you should offer them respect in all circumstances. Cultivate the four qualities of humility, compassion, respect for others, and indifference to worldly honors. And chant the holy name. Bhaktivinoda cries out the following plea at the Lord's lotus feet. When, oh when, will you make me qualified to chant your holy name? Please say with me. When, oh when? Wonderful. So he speaks of cultivating four quality. So these are the four symptoms of nirapadad bhajans. It means bhajan, you know, worship of Krishna, which is free from offense. Yeah? This is a things, and we can start in our lives to practice them. Humility born of complete detachment from material sense gratification. You do not want to have anything any longer for yourself. That's that's an interesting practice. I would like to ask you a question. How much do you want to serve others, and how much do you want to be served? It's an interesting question, isn't it? You can ask this question to you. Do I actually feel in my heart the desire to serve others? And or do I only want to be served myself by others? This is humility. This brings us into humility, this exercise. I had one thought, yes. My dear devotees, I want to tell you, it's not so hard as it sounds to serve others without desiring to serve yourself. May sound like a tall order, isn't it, Dina Dayal? Doesn't sound so easy, isn't it?
Definitely.
I have noticed one thing in my life as a preacher. There are many times, situations when I really do not feel inclined to get out and preach because I'm tired and I'm overworked, or I had to deal with different problems, and I myself feel, oh, when there is a time where people care for Sachidananda Swami, why do I always have to care for others? But I have noted in my life something, that when you actually take care of others, your problems are taken care of by God. It's a very amazing. Once there was a sadhu, and many people came to him, and they complained to him. And at the end, there was a particularly strong-willed man who said, "Oh, no one likes me. Everything is bad and blah, so on and so forth." And the sadhu said to him, "Have you already taken care of someone today?" "No, Prabhu. What are you asking? The highly impractical suggestion. How should I take care? I'm so much a mess myself. How shall I be able to take care of others?" And he continued to tell his problems. His wife had run away. His son tried to get money from him, and so on. Again, the sadhu, after the man became a little silent, asked, "Have you already taken care of someone today?" The man said, "No. I have to take care of myself." Then finally, the man was already gone somewhere else. The sadhu turned to his to the people who were around him, and he said, "Oh, isn't it a pity? This man could have such an easy life, because if he would take care of others, God would take care of his problems." It's really a very nice rule. I don't know if it is exactly that Krishna comes and, you know, takes care of our problems like that. But this is a natural law. When you are taking care of others, you will find your life very blissful and easy. This is I think, the experience of all preachers, and even of those who do some selfless care. There is a wonderful energy in which comes when you take care of others. So energy of the Lord, because the Lord has a desire to take care of all living beings, and therefore he will just like those people who are working in his project. The next thing which Bhaktivinoda Thakur says we should practice is compassion devoid of envy. This compassion devoid of envy is a very good quality also to cultivate. The Buddhists have also this compassion. I mean, I expressed myself wrongly. They have knowledge of this compassion. The Buddhists say that compassion is that force which drives away ego. So the Buddhists will try to be compassionate to others, because then their own ego gets small. It's not that they care for others, because others, I think, are mostly an illusion for them. but they do this in a very selfish way. We, however, know that the other has his own value, and that we need, and it's good to take care of him, because he is a dear servant of Lord Krishna. The next practice is purity of the heart, which is free from materialistic false ego. I don't know how to practice this in any other way than by doing a simple meditation, whereby you become convinced that you are an eternal soul, an eternal servant of Krishna. You do this type of soul meditation, Aham Brahmasmi. In our books, in which chapter do we find the Narayan Kavacha shield, please? Canto, we know. Is it the sixth canto, isn't it?
Yes.
Sixth canto, yes. In the sixth canto, there is one practice called the Narayan Kavacha shield. And there is a verse in that practice, how you meditate that you are qualitatively one with God. Qualitatively, yes. You're Satchit Ananda. And it's a very good practice when you are waking up in the morning to just stop a little and think that you are full of bliss, full of knowledge, and full of eternity, only in a small little quantity. Huh? What do you think, Dinalaya? Could you do this? Just remember in the morning that you are spiritual soul. That's a very good thing that helps us to not get into the false ego. Hare Krishna. Purity of the heart. And the fourth is to offer respect according to the position of the person. I once talked with Radhanath Maharaj, and I said, you have such a good effect on devotees, how do you do, what do you do? And he said, I just encourage devotees. And I think we can, this encouragement helps us to offer respect to the position of the person, offer respect to the person according to his position. Mm. So one more, we will soon make a little pause. I want to make one more point. Sanatana Goswami, he says, a person who is actually wise tries to cultivate humility in three ways. First, with his body, by offering obeisances. Here we come very practically. You should, when you offer obeisances, you should really make it a point to cultivate humility with your body. Just bring your body down, and you will get some very, very nice humble feelings when you learn this. You see, we live. Do you remember the first time when you made an obeisances? Who remembers? Peter, what was your experience?
I felt strange.
One felt strange, yeah. Kyo, what was your experience?
In Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
That was when some senior devotee was preaching to me, and finally I was convinced.
And you bow down to him. How did you feel?
Yeah, I cried.
You cried? Uh-huh. Who remembers his first obeisances?
It was in Hare Krishna temple. In fact, I was used to bow down in church.
Like this?
Huh? Like this.
Oh yeah, in a Catholic way?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's the way how they did. But first time I go on the floor in high Krishna temple, and somehow or other everyone did, then okay. It was really bitter feel for me. I wasn't used to it, so it was really hard. It was actually surrender definitely. But I felt very nice after that.
Our Matatis were very interesting.
I remember the first time I thought it was a yoga exercise.
A yoga exercise?
I thought it was something with Kundalini, because I'm still in the
yeah.
So I thought everybody is paying obeisances, so I thought you're just working the Kundalini. So I was really conscious of that, and then later on I read the translation of the Manjakala. Yeah, I thought it was nicer actually. But that was my first impression.
Kundalini, yes. Thank you. Vishakha, you have such an experience? So you are born in Krishna consciousness? Also, it was nothing strange. You were just as a baby doing your obeisances, huh? Manjulali, you remember the time? No? Do you remember, or is it? I also don't remember the first time when I did it. I mean, when it was, but I remember, I mean, I don't remember where it was and when it was, but I remember when I first saw it, I said, I will never do this. I will never do this. Let everyone else do it, not me. This is too much. And I remembered when I finally did it, I was not yet 100% convinced. I did it a little bit out of group dynamic. Everyone did it, and therefore I also did it. And when I did it the first time, I felt, oh no, I will never do this again. I don't like to do what everyone else does. It's in fact, when everyone else does something, I want to do it differently. This is how I remember I felt. And I knew at that time that I thought maybe I cannot become a devotee because everyone bows down and I'm not feeling like that. I bowed down then because I liked the devotees, but I felt so miserable and I decided never again. This is not what Krishna consciousness is, that you do something against your inner convictions. And then it took me another quarter of a year before I bowed down again. But at that time, I remember when I did it the second time, I was convinced. I thought, oh, I'm bowing down to the Lord. And I had heard this lecture. I don't know if I had read it or heard it on the tape, but Prabhupada said, anyways, we will be forced to bow down by the material nature. And I do remember it was very relieving. Then one day, I personally decided that, oh, I had so much of a problem to bow down. Now I don't have a problem any longer. I will do something which the Goswamis did. I will make a Dandavat Parikrama. Because I wanted to really feel what is this obeisances, you know, what is the core of paying obeisances. And I remember I had a few little sessions when no one looked at me. At Govardhan I tried, and here and there. And then I decided to make a Dandavat Parikrama around Radhakund and Syamakund. Early in the morning, at 2 o'clock in the morning, when there would, again, no one would see me. I had done a Dandavat Parikrama with one of my friends in Vrindavan. And so I equipped myself. I took the paddies. I looked like a rugby player, you know, ear paddies. And then at the hands, because you would go down. And then I got a cushion like this, a small cushion, so that I could lie down, because it was very cold in the morning in this the stone pavement. Then I did it. And my dear devotees, I have never seen such a powerful practice in Krishna consciousness. My life, I chanted all the time, and I do remember I came to it, you know, always going like measuring the way with my body, and then where the hands were, then where the hands were, and so I came to the pigs. They were on the road, and I came just very close to the pig. I was here, looked at the pig, and I went, "Hari Bol." And the pig looked at me, and all of a sudden I noticed it was not really a pig. He was a devotee, and he was happy. Then I went past the pigs, then I went past the into the monkeys, and one monkey, a young monkey, started to urinate. But the big monkey, the chief, he just went like, "Ping! You can't urinate. Here's a Dandavat Parikrama. Be a little cultured, you know, little." And I could pass the monkeys, and I noticed how the whole creation seemed to be what they say in the Vasudeva Kutumbika, joined together as souls who were all servants of Krishna. It was such a wonderful experience. I would recommend to you to, just if you want to try what is obeisances, why is it a spiritual practice, to do it and just make this experience. But do it, don't do it for your false ego that everyone sees you. Do it when no one sees you. And you will see after some time, when you don't think any longer, "Oh, what am I doing? It's so special, you know." It's a Goswami practice. It's authorized in our tradition. And you just go chum, 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 and you will see what it means to get down. See, usually we feel humility is a mood. What does this mood have to do with a physical or bodily exercise. In modern psychology, we say when you don't have a mood and you do something, there is not much benefit. Only when you have the certain mood or understanding and you give it expression through your body is value there. But when you do something consciously with the body, you also get the mood. In other words, yes, the mood gives expression to physical practice, but the physical practice can also get work back to you and give you a certain mood. I would like to make an experiment with you, which I've learned with when we were last ISKCON convention with Poonachandra Prabhu. Yeah. Please just fold your arm and look as if you are the king of the world. You have to look a little up. Imagine there are 20,000 followers before you, and you can be very proud of your thing. Close a little your eyes and try to feel and how it feels. Maybe it feels strange for you, but a little bit like Napoleon, huh? Okay, now we will do another move. We will take our hands, we will fold them before our chest, and we will look down and then we feel how we feel. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Could you notice a difference? Majesties can always feel this with it because they're more sensitive. Kyo, could you feel a difference?
Yeah, the first one was much more natural.
Reuben, have you felt something or couldn't you get into it?
Yes, first time, but a little nervous.
Uh-huh. Reuben is naturally very devoted. Yes. You can see how a mood carries, how a certain bodily posture will affect your mood. That's when you give a talk, you are always said, when you are a little nervous maybe, you said you should put up your spine, open your shoulder, that your chest is there, and then talk. Then after some time, you will be very confident. I had to learn this because in my life, I'm a very shy person, actually. You don't see it, but I'm very shy. But I had to sometimes learn this, especially when I had per evening up to almost 10,000 listeners. There was a time when preaching was very, very nice. And I looked down the curtain, and, oh my God! Oh! Let me phone my mother. You know, this is too much, mother. Yeah, let me know. But I was the only one to go out. Okay. Then. Good evening. Oh, my God. I want to run away. And then, but then it comes, actually, when you do like this. So, the usual understanding is posture and other things are a result of one's internal mood. But we learn in sadhana bhakti, a principle is of sadhana bhakti is even if we are not yet having the mood, if we do an activity, the mood will come. This is the whole principle of the 64 angas of devotional service. You have learned them in the Bhaktivedanta College?
The
Bhakti-shastri. Bhakti-shastri. You've learned them. You do things with the body, clapping before the deities, singing Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You learn different procedures of deity worship. And then, by this, it is expected that bhava will come into your heart, some Krishna conscious emotions. No? That's the whole idea of Rupa Goswami's method of doing the 64 items of devotional service. So this is how you practice humility with the body. You bow down. You're using your body, and after some time, some good feelings of Krishna consciousness will come. Then by your words, you can practice humility by always offering respects to others and not demand respect. This is how Sanatana Goswami's advice. You use your words to offer respect to others. And how do you practice humility with your mind? Would you like to know? You are aware of your own shortcomings, and you learn to see the good in others. This is my shortcoming. You are aware, and you learn to appreciate the good in others. I must tell you about a practice. There was this one very nice devotee. He was a spiritual master, and he had one aspiring disciple who so much wanted to become his disciple, but the guru thought he's not qualified because he's so arrogant. So he said, "I can only accept you as my disciple if you find someone who is less qualified than you in all respects." This arrogant man said, "This is very simple. I just need to go out of the door, and the next person I find is less qualified to me in all respects. I'm highly qualified, and everyone is less qualified." So he went out. But then, as he wanted to approach one gentleman and said, "Would you be willing to come to my Guru Maharaj with me?" He thought, "Well, it's difficult to say if he is less qualified to me in all respects. There will for sure be something where he is more qualified." Maybe I know more books, but maybe he can jump higher than me. So then he went through all creatures. He finally arrived at the animal. Oh, they have really no brain. But then he noticed the donkey, although he had no brain, and he made terrible music, the donkey at the same time was extremely strong. It seemed to have a quality of being able to carry heavy loads, which that man did not have. Finally, in utter dejection that he could not pass the test of his guru, he went down on the field and passed some to pass, and as he was building the human pile, his excrement, he thought, "Well, the order was to find something, to find someone or something which is less qualified in all respects. Certainly my stool is less qualified to me." But then he said, "No, it's not correct. It was Nai Sabji before." And I was not such good sabji. Then he saw a worm approaching the stool with hungry intent. He thought, well, the worm is certainly less qualified because he feels attracted to the most rejectable quality, the stool. Then he thought, even the worm is more qualified because it has one qualification which I don't have. It can eat the stool and create or transform it into wonderful manure. Do you know what is manure? It's like dung. When the worm eats stool and then it passes, then that worm stool is extremely good for fertilizing the ground. Yes? Yes. We know such things. And then he understood, even the worm is in one aspect more qualified than me. So I have not passed the order of the test of my guru. I cannot find anyone who is less qualified to me in all aspects. And therefore, he said to his guru, I flunked. I could not pass your test. Now I will say goodbye. So the guru said, finally you have become a little humble. You are now at least qualified enough that we speak about your spiritual advancement. And this is how the story goes. So my dear devotees, practice, if you want to be humble, the art of seeing the good in others. It is very, very nice. It's very, very good. Try to see what is good in others. That is how you practice humility with the mind. An intelligent person who wants love for Krishna practices humility in three ways, with the body, words, and the mind. We will make now a... Oh, yeah, I have only made a note. Vaishnava is adosha darshan. Adosha means no mistake. He tries to really see there is no mistake in another person. He prefers to look at the good qualities. He is not a fault finder. Don't we have this? Vaishnava should be non-envious and he should be free from the quality of finding fault. The guru is sometimes described as dosha darshan. He has to see the mistakes of his disciple. So never try to become a guru. It's not a good, it's a very difficult thing. Better it, because if the guru does not see the mistakes the disciples do, no one will correct the disciple. So the Vaishnava usually is said to be adosha darshan, and the guru is dosha darshan. Dosha means mistake. Dosha also means a preparation, a South Indian preparation, dosha. But dosha in Sanskrit means mistake. Do we say dosha actually? Is it a dosha or what? Dosha. Yeah. Or is it dosa? The mistake is dosha. Yeah, and the preparation is dosa, I think. Yeah. So, try to become adosha dasha. I will now make a little little pause of 15 minutes. Please use the time wisely. Our Kyo will be so kind to give us a sign again. Kyo, is that true? Very good.